Hey guys, this is Nathan Chen, U.S. champion.
I'm Madison Chalk.
And I'm Evan Bates.
Hey, this is Max Sen.
Hi, I'm Madison Hubble.
And I'm Zach Donahue.
Hey everyone, it's Vincent Joe.
This is Ben Augusto, and you're listening to Ice Talk.
It seems like 5 years ago that this season just started, but after all the Challengers events, all the Grand Prix, all the national championships, Europeans, four continents, Olympics, Junior Worlds, now we have finally reached the week of the World Championships. It is the 67th episode of Ice Talk. I am Jackie Wong of RockerSkating.com. Last week, Brooke Castile and I previewed the ladies and pairs events in Milan for this week. And this week, we've got Olympic silver medalist Ben Augusto joining me for ice dance and for the men. And later on the podcast, I will have Tara Kane and Danny O'Shea on. And a quick disclaimer, they have withdrawn from the World Championships this week, but we recorded their interview before they made the announcement. Either way, it is still a great look at their resurgence for this season, including a win at Four Continents. But first, Ben Augusto, welcome to Ice Talk.
Thanks for having me, Jackie. It's awesome to be here, and I just wanted to say amazing job all season. It's been so wonderful to like keep up with your commentary and your analysis. It's brilliant. So thank you for what you do for the sport.
Thanks, Ben. Well, I was just about to say the same thing about you. You've been back on U.S. skating fans' radars this season as a commentator, and most recently on NBC's Olympic Ice during the Olympics. You've done a fantastic job. What has it been like to be on the other side of the microphone?
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun. It's amazing to have the opportunity to kind of pontificate about skating and to really get into the details of, you know, sport that we all care so much about and are so passionate about, and to kind of have that ability to tell people how I feel and what I'm seeing and what is important to me in the performance. And so that's been really a fun process, and it's been challenging. It's hard to break it down and to say something in a short amount of time that's actually understandable and doesn't just confuse people more. So it's been a great challenge and a real pleasure.
Well, you and one of your other halves, Tanith White, have been doing a phenomenal job with all the figure skating coverage this season. I know figure skating fans have been very much appreciative of everything that you guys are doing right now.
Well, thank you. Yeah, she's amazing. She's the best out there.
Well, the ice dance event at the Olympics was one of the best dance events I've ever seen. Two of the three Olympic medalists will not be in Milan this week, though. Tessa Virtue and Scott Moyer and Mayan Alex Shibutani opted out of Worlds. Plus Ekaterina Bobrova and Dmitry Soloviev, who were fifth, they won't be at Worlds either. But Gabriela Papadakis and Guillaume Cicerone will be there and will be perhaps the biggest favorites of the entire competition in any discipline, I would say. What do you think is in it for them here at Worlds?
Oh my goodness. Well, yeah, certainly I'm looking forward to seeing Gabby and Guillaume and a new costume, I hope.
Oh gosh, yes.
You know, I mean, just I'm excited to see them skate the way that we all know that they can. And I know that they're going to be hungry and, of course, devastated with the Olympics. Not that they should be devastated with a silver medal, but I think the potential and the season that they've been having all year, which has just been so remarkable and with so many records breaking and records broken at the Olympics. So I think that they're primed and ready to be on the attack and looking to skate the best that they have all season.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about that costume malfunction as just something being completely really out of their control. I mean, seconds into their short dance. So, you know, they will be in a lot of ways looking for some redemption, even though, you know, they, as you said, they did win the Olympic silver medal. Gabby and Guillaume, as you said, looking for another world title. But you look down the list of competitors, you only have, this is the first time I've said this in a couple of seasons, you only have three other teams who have won a world medal before in this field.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, because in every other event, you're like, oh, seven of these teams or eight of these teams have won world medals before. And so
it's so ridiculous.
Yeah, right. In some ways, so yeah. This podium is very much wide open. So who do you have your eyes on most?
Yeah, I think it's actually one of the most exciting dance events now with some of those really traditional podium placers out of the mix. It opens things up. I mean, of course, we have the French, Papadakis and Cicerone, who, barring amazing, crazy, horrible happenings, I think will be the favorites, obviously, for the gold medal. And then I would say my favorite for the silver are going to be Hubble and Donahue. They, you know, they're U.S. champions first time this year. They were ahead of the other two U.S. teams in a lot of points of the Grand Prix. And, you know, barring their own mistakes, they're kind of their own worst enemy. If they can put down the skate that they're capable of and the skates that they did at the U.S. Championships, they will for sure be looking at getting that silver medal spot.
Yeah.
And I think that they're a team for sure looking for redemption. You know, they've had so many times over the last several years where they've been so close.
Yeah.
To really, you know, so close to winning the U.S. Championships, so close to getting a bronze medal at Worlds, so close to getting a bronze medal at Grand Prix Final, and then just a little mistake, him launching himself and falling on a Twizzle, her falling at the U.S. Championship is just always something where they get so excited about how well it's going. In the free dance, usually, right? Like they have an amazing short, and then they set themselves up so well, and then the pressure gets to them. They get excited, and they can't deliver. They can't keep it on. They got to keep their heads on straight. If they can do that, they're in the silver medal position in my book.
Yeah, and that's the thing that we love so much about Hubble and Donahue skating, too, is that they really take it to the edge. Like, it wouldn't be Hubble and Donahue if they skated conservatively, right?
No,
and
right.
So that's the kind of edge of your seat sort of feeling that you always have with them. I mean, they were third after the short dance at the Olympics. And, you know, we could speculate all we want about whether if they had skated a clean free, if they would have kept that, you know, bronze medal position. Who knows? It just
I think they would have.
Yeah,
I think they would have.
So
they have like you said, they have this attack and a no holds barred kind of approach. And when it works, they put so much of their emotion and their passion into it that it has a different effect with the audience and that it counts for something. It really does. When you grab the audience and they're on the edge of their seat, like you said, that is always going to, and if everything technically is the same, that edge of the seat is going to beat conservative and safe every day. So,
right.
You know, Maya and Alex Shibutani, I think they're fantastic and they've been such great ambassadors for the sport and such great champions and inspiration for a lot of dancers, but they do tend to skate conservatively. And as a result, they tend to be extremely clean. And that's what we associate with them is just really clean execution and getting their levels and nailing it. And when they have a spectacular program, you know, like their first Coldplay, Fix You, was just such a wonderful vehicle and the music worked just perfectly. And it built that edge of your seat anticipation that maybe they don't always give themselves in their own performance, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that they need to use their vehicle more so than skaters like Hubble and Donahue, who put all that excitement and energy into the performance, unfortunately, a lot of times to their detriment because they can't execute everything cleanly. So I was hoping after U.S. Championships that they'd kind of figured that out and figured out where that line is, right? They're always trying to push the line. And I mean, there's one of my favorite quotes is you'll never know how far you can go unless you're willing to go too far. And they tend to be the embodiment of that. And so I want them to find that edge, that limit that they can just ride it.
Yeah.
And then they'll be, you know, one of the greats for sure.
Yeah. Well, what's also interesting about this competition too, is with Maddie and Zach, is that they are coming in as actual solid podium favorites this time around. You really couldn't say that with Worlds last year, where they were third after the short, but they were really outsiders in a lot of people's eyes and probably in their own eyes as well. But, you know, at the Olympics also, you know, they were not one of the three favorites. They were coming in as just a bit of an outsider. But here in Milan, they're going to be, they are expected to medal. So that may be a different thing for them. They may not feel like they need to be like extra pushed, you know, to get that medal. And so who knows what's going to happen with that.
I hope so. And the short dance will be an interesting tell in regards to that, because typically they come in slightly underdog, they skate a lights out short dance, set themselves up to now be like, wow, now we're in a medal position, and then they can't keep it together. So coming in right from the get-go, looking at a podium position, you know, silver medal position, if they can skate a clean short with that expectation already on their shoulders, I think that bodes well for them in the free.
Yep, for sure. Well, speaking of bouncing back, Madison Chuck and Evan Bates had that nightmare fall in their free dance at the Olympics. Yeah, they have two world medals, so they know how to get there. What is your outlook for them?
Yeah, they are certainly in the mix here. And, you know, I think, unfortunately, they've been kind of overlooked this season in the U.S., the teams from the U.S., and they're right up there. I mean, they're U.S. champions, like you said, two-time world medalists, and they are... I mean, I think that they're really the most exciting U.S. team. I think that they put the most energy into their performance. And again, they tend to make mistakes with that energy they put in. A little bit sloppier than Hubble and Donahue typically. You know, free legs maybe not always matching, not always just looking as polished. But certainly, I think nobody matches them for energy and effort that they put into the performance.
Right.
So, you know, for sure they were devastated with their free dance at the Olympics, and they will as well be looking for redemption. And I'm sure they've been working hard in the weeks since the Olympics because of that disappointment and wanting to just really live up to their own expectations, not to mention everybody else's. So.
Yeah.
They're going to be battling with Hubble Donahue, I would say, for silver medal. But then also in the bronze, I mean, the battle for the bronze is going to be, the list goes on, right? We've got the Italians, yeah. Capellini and Lanotte,
yep.
World champions themselves, and just unbelievable veterans, storytellers and performers like nobody else in the business. I mean, really, they can put a smile on anybody's face, no matter how bad a day you're having when you watch them do their programs and just pull at your heartstrings with their free dance. So I think if they can get all their levels and get, you know, have the execution, they're going to be in the mix for a medal as well.
Well, I mean, Capellini Lanotte, that one world medal that they have is that world championship that you were talking about. That was that post-Olympic Worlds 4 years ago.
Right.
Which was, I remember that Worlds was a little bit insane too, because everybody expected Pechela and Borzat to come in and win that world championship, and then that didn't happen. But, you know, I think what's going to be really intriguing to watch with them here is that they're skating at home in what could very well be their last competition after, you know, over a decade in the senior ranks. So what do you think the home crowd is going to be like? What do you think you think they're going to make a difference here for Capellini and Lanotte?
The home crowd will certainly be insane. I mean, figure skating is popular in Italy. Ice dance is popular. I remember in Torino 2006 at the Olympics, we had
Barbara Fusarpoli.
When I won an Olympic silver medal. But Fusarpoli and Margaglio, they were former world champions just a few years before that, and they were heavily favored to win, and the crowd was crazy. Every practice, there was thousands of people at every practice, and guess who had to skate after that stare down? This guy, yours truly. So, you know, you're all ready to get on the ice, and all of a sudden they're standing there staring at each other. It felt like 10 minutes.
What's happening?
Completely threw us out of our headspace, but maybe that was a good thing, because we had a great short dance, original dance back
original
then.
Dance.
You know, the Italian crowd is really, really into it, and
the Italian crowds are very knowledgeable figure skating crowds. So
yeah, and Capellini and Lanotte, they really thrive on the energy from the audience. They're, you know, they're performers. That's I feel like they're performers first, right? Ahead of everything else, they're great athletes, they're great competitors, but they're performers. And so I think having that connection with the audience will boost their energy. It'll boost the performance, and their performance is what tends to carry their score. I think obviously they're good at getting their levels, but their performance is what really gets the audience and the judges connected to it. So if they're getting a lot of energy from the crowd, it's going to for sure boost them up, and they'll be again fighting for a medal there.
Yeah, I mean, great minds think alike. You and Tanith both mentioned that when she was previewing the Olympics ice dance event with me, she was talking about how they really feed off energy from the crowd. They really like it. It depends completely on skate order for them, and if they're able, if somebody else before them skates a like kind of a lighter slower thing, they can come in and just grab all that energy and just like kill it in that free skate or in that free dance. So we'll see what happens with them. They're certainly sentimental favorites in a lot of ways.
Sure.
One team we didn't get to see at the Olympics that we'll see here in Milan, Alexandra Stepanova and Yvonne Buchan. They weren't invited to the Olympics by the IOC. I'm still not sure. They probably still aren't sure why that happened, which is just ridiculous.
It's been such a non-transparent process. It's quite frustrating.
Yeah.
I was upset not to see Stepanova and Buchan at the Olympics because I really feel like, especially this season, they've been the strongest Russian team. Last few seasons, I've really liked the potential and I love their skating and I always think they do some interesting things, but they just couldn't put it all together. And then this year they've been skating so well and they really stepped up their game. They beat Bobrova and Soloviev in the short dance at Europeans. They weren't able to hold on to that lead and they just barely lost to them overall. But for my money, they've always been my favorite, or especially this season, they've been my favorite Russian team. And so it was, I think it was a loss to not see them. So it'll be good to see them compete here. I'm sure that they are going to be coming in with a fury, being so upset about not being able to participate in the Olympics. And I'm sure they're going to feel like they have something to prove. Yeah. And that'll make for an exciting performance. And like I said, their stuff this year, their programs have been spectacular and they're looking the best they've ever looked.
Yeah, I love the power from this team. They're just so, they have this like, real ease of power that when you watch them you're kind of like, oh wow, they're going really fast, but where do they actually push off, like did that happen? So they definitely have top five or medal potentially, but I feel like somewhat dark horsey Caitlin Weaver and Andrew Poggé. They were seventh at the Olympics, but they weren't, all of those teams in that top like that 4, 5, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, like they were all pretty bunched up together. They also have two world medals, and then you've got Piper Gillis and Paul Poirier. They had a spectacular free dance at the Olympics and they were eighth. So how do you think these two Canadian teams fit in?
Yeah, I mean, Weaver and Poggé get forgotten a lot, unfortunately, and I think the last several years they've struggled to skate up to their potential. But this season, I think they've looked the best that they've maybe ever looked. And they made a big coaching change. They went to Nikolai Morozov and they've really turned things around. And it's hard to say, right? Because I thought that they skated wonderfully at the Olympics and, and they ended up okay. I was kind of surprised maybe they weren't higher, but they're an incredibly wonderful team with a lot of with just such ease of power and finally, I think, finding their attack. They're one of those teams where I always felt, and Hubble and Donahue were like this as well, where I felt like they were so good, but they made it look like they weren't really trying. Like they didn't give you that feeling like they wanted it and they didn't have that passion and attack. And so now both of them are finding that in their skating, maintaining that ease of power and very gentle attack, but then, finding the energy and boosting the performance. So, I think their Jesui Milad free dance is one of the best they've ever done.
Yeah.
And I was very happy that they brought that back this year. I thought that was a good move. So yeah, they'll be again in the mix for that bronze medal spot. And it's going to depend. We keep saying this about every discipline now, it's going to depend on execution, right? It's like singles. If the guys land all their jumps, oh my good. And who knows what's going to happen. And if the teams that are going to get all those levels and then push their performance, that's who's going to end up on top.
Well, any way you look at it, it's going to be a very exciting dance event at Worlds coming up. Well, let's switch over to the men. We have a few more minutes to go here with this preview. Same thing there with the dance. Two of the three Olympic medalists won't be there. Yuzuru Hanyu still nursing that injury that took him out of most of the season. Javier Fernandez probably had never had any intention of going to Worlds anyway. So that leaves Shoma Uno looking for his world title, but it's not going to be easy at all for him, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, Shoma would love to be numero
you know,
and he's got everything it takes. I mean, he's just such a spectacular performer. He's got so much charisma on the ice. You can see the influence of Daisuke Takahashi, you know, who he said is one of his idols, and you can just see that influence in his skating, the way he interprets the music, and it's spectacular. He's probably the most athletic jumper of those guys. He gets so high. I was talking to some of the coaches here in Colorado Springs, and they were saying sometimes his feet are a little bit slow in his snap into his rotation, which I think is why he has to jump so high. He maybe starts rotating a slightly slower, but man, he's got it all, right? So if he can deliver, he's going to be hard to beat. But then, I mean, we've got Nathan Chen, right, from the U.S. He's going to be coming in with a major axe to grind against himself.
Yes.
You know, he came into the Olympic Games with so much pressure. I mean, it was like a good over 2 years of people like, this guy's going to win the Olympics. And, you know, you couldn't walk through an airport without seeing him as a superhero on every banner from United. And just so much hype. And I think it's just unbelievably hard to deliver under all that pressure. And, you know, he's a young kid. He has not been in that situation before. And I think, unfortunately, it takes, like, you have to go through that where you go in with so much pressure and you can't deliver. And unfortunately, that experience came to him at the Olympic Games.
Right.
That's bad timing. You know, he blew us all away with his free skate was just unbelievable. I mean, 6 quads, never been done, never really been even thought of before that point. And so he showed us what he's capable of. And if he can do a short and a long the way he skated his long, he's going to be unstoppable.
Yeah, I mean, it really does seem like for Nathan, it happens in that first jump. If there's something that happens with the very first thing in his short program, then you're just not going to see the kind of consistency that we've expected from him. But you know, Worlds is a very different competition. You know, nobody's expecting him to be Olympic champion here. It's a very different ballgame. And you know, what will be interesting to see with Nathan is that, yeah, this is his second Worlds. This is really his third incredibly huge competition, with Worlds last year and Olympics this year. And we haven't seen him at his best at the very biggest competitions yet.
True. Yeah.
We've seen him at his best at 4 Continents, where he beat Yuzuru Hanyu last year. But that's a very different animal than Worlds. So we'll have to see where his head is, where his quad lutz is, to be honest, because that was a big question mark at the Olympics. We'll see about that. But Bo-Yang Jin, 4th at the Olympics, right?
Yeah. Bo-Yang was great at the Olympics. And he, you know, he's one of these guys that we always looked at as, well, he's a really strong jumper, but his skating is just not up to par. And his artistry is, you know, is not very exciting to watch, but he's really stepped it up and he's looking stronger and stronger. Yeah. And he's expressing his music, and his choreography is getting so much better. So he's checking off those boxes of places where people said he was lacking, and he's getting better and better. So if he has that great skate and he puts it all together and somebody else makes one mistake, he could potentially win.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, for me, his short program is really strong this year. It's really a great vehicle for him. His free skate is still kind of like, okay, we're gonna do a little bit of Star Wars, and then we're gonna do the, you know, the cantina dance, and like that. Like, he shows his personality in that footwork sequence, but then the rest of it is not quite what you expect from him, given the brilliant short program that he has. And
that's true.
Yeah. It has a lot to do with the fact that, you know, you just have to spend so much energy prepping for these jumps. But I mean, he's the 2-time and reigning world bronze medalist for a reason, and one of those reasons the last couple of years has been that other people have made mistakes and he was able to get on the podium. This year, people might make mistakes and he might win the whole world championship. So
it's possible. Yeah.
You know, he will be on the podium on his own merit. No doubt about that. It's just a question of where and kind of how he's going to earn the medals that he potentially is going to earn.
And it's not like he's getting there with consistency based on not trying the difficult jumps. Oh, I mean, he's doing all, I mean, he's, yeah. He was pushing a lot of these quads before these other guys were.
Exactly.
So, yeah, for sure. I agree. He'll be on the podium with it on his own merit. And he's going to give us a great show on the way.
Right.
And another great show I'm excited about is Vincent Joe.
Oh boy.
And this potential of, he could be battling for a medal here. I have to, full disclosure, I work with him a bit, and I get to see him train every day here in Colorado Springs. And I mean, he's looking good. He's hungry. He's motivated. Jumps are looking strong. So I think this season has been about trying to stay healthy. That's mm-hmm. been the challenge. And I think that's going to be the challenge for every single guy moving forward. It's just going to be, can you not be injured all the time, right? Like with all these quads, the physical toll is real, but you know, he's feeling good and he's keeping it together. He's trying to keep his head on straight and not get ahead of himself. Yeah. I think if he, you know, he's going for five quads in the long, and if he can rotate all of them, that is going to go a long way. And if he can stay up on all of them, like he almost did. I mean, I think he was under rotated at US Championships, but he had a great skate at US Championships. If he can pull something out like that, he's going to be in real good shape.
Yeah. I mean, sixth at the Olympics, I mean, if you just deduce the withdrawals from the top, you know, from the top three, one and three are gone, and you know, he's automatically right there in that fourth position. So he is not far away from that podium at all. And he knows that it is very much possible for him to get there. And you know, besides Hanyu and Fernandez, no Patrick Chan either. And so they have won the last seven world championships. And so we will actually have a first time world champion this week. So that's going to be pretty interesting and amazing to see.
Yeah, that's really exciting. I mean, it's these years, they open up opportunities, and the people who can step through that door that opens, they can rise to the occasion, are the ones that are going to reap the benefits. And yeah. It's really exciting to see that.
Exactly.
Looking forward to it.
The Russian men are two of the skaters who have a lot of potential, but they just are completely unknowns because of their
They're so inconsistent.
Yeah,
so inconsistent. I mean, and when they are consistent and they land everything, they're brilliant. And their skating is beautiful. Their choreography is great. But man, they just got to put it together. So you really never know what to expect. It's always that big question mark.
Yeah.
And they could be up there on the podium, or they could be down in like 15th place.
Very much. I mean, Mikhail Kuyada has had success before at Worlds. He was fourth 2 years ago. And then you've got Dmitry Aliyev, who had that really great show at the Olympics. Like, you know, he kind of came in not having done the team event, not having been at the Olympics at all until the day before the men's short program. And he came in kind of being like, okay, well, this is just another competition. And I think when he was in that final group after that, at that incredible short program, he kind of was like, okay, well, I'm in the final group. And that might have messed with his head a little bit. But he could make some noise there. He was a European silver medalist. So, you know, he's got some potential for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no underestimating the pressure of all of a sudden being in this position of having the potential to be really successful, and you're not used to that. It weighs heavily on your mind, and it's very easy to get ahead of yourself mentally. And the name of the game is just stay in the moment. If every moment that you're in your program, you're in a spotlight and nothing else, everything's dark. It's like the only thing that can exist is what's in that spotlight. And it's so hard to live in that space.
So we have some other names here. I know you've got to run soon, but, Max Aaron, surprise entry as a third alternate after Jason Brown and Ross Miner both declined. How do you think he's going to fit in with?
Yeah,
with the
you
rest
know,
of
Max,
him?
it's exciting for him. You know, he finished college. He started a job in Scottsdale, and now he's like, oh yeah, I'll come back and do this. And so he's been back here training. It's been great to have him back in the rink. And you know, I think he has just a different perspective at this point, where he's really relaxed. He's not not freaking out about it, and I think he's just going to try to go and enjoy it. And we could see maybe some of the best skating from him that we have ever seen, because he's in a really good place mentally and is going to be relaxed. And you'd be surprised at how well you can skate when you're not stressing about it.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to look forward to with this World Championship next week. But thank you, Ben, for joining me today for this preview.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor and a pleasure, and I can't wait to watch it.
Hi, this is Tara Payne.
And this is Danny O'Shea, and you're listening to Ice Talk.
They're about to head to Italy for their second career appearance at the World Championships. They have also had one of the most inspiring comeback stories of the season. I am talking about 2016 U.S. champions Tara Kane and Danny O'Shea making their debut appearance on Ice Talk. How are you guys doing?
Doing pretty well, thank you.
Thank you for having us. We're excited to be on here.
Amazing. Well, we are in the midst of another snowstorm here in the Northeast, so it must be pretty nice to be in Florida right now, yeah?
Yeah, we have a rough life down here in Florida.
Yeah, the weather this morning was in the mid-70s, so that was really nice.
Well, I actually haven't checked the weather forecast for Milan yet, but, I'm sure there'll be... It'll be nice in the rink, and maybe you'll have some good food while you're there.
Yeah, I'm excited. Although I heard through a source, so I'm not exactly sure how truthful it is, but that the bread makers were on strike. So hopefully that gets resolved before we get there.
Oh, boy.
I'm really looking forward to the food in Milan. Yeah. So I really hope the bread makers can have a sit down and chat it out before I get there.
Yeah, bread makers, and hopefully the fashion designers aren't on strike either.
Right.
Well, so the last time I saw the two of you was actually in South Korea. I know skating fans saw your posts about that. Tell our listeners a little bit more about that experience.
So we were in Pyeongchang as first alternates. As you would expect, it was a very bittersweet experience. We tried to take what we could out of it, but it wasn't fun. It was really enjoyable to watch the competition, and it was great to be at the Olympics, but it wasn't a great position to be in, being the first alternates and watching the event you really hope to skate at and you train your whole life to appear in, and just having to sit in the stands and watch it. It was really bittersweet.
Yeah, it's a pretty hard situation. It was amazing that U.S. Figure Skating was able to bring us there in case of anything that might have gone wrong, but also for us to have the experience that we can take with us for the next 4 years, and coming into Beijing, feel like we have experienced it, maybe not feel so overwhelmed by the situation, but it was definitely not an easy thing to go through. It was made easier by people trying to make it easier, but
yeah.
And by some great skating, to be honest.
Yeah, but it was emotionally challenging, I would say, but it really did have its ups.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably even more bittersweet knowing the circumstances of the U.S. not having two spots with that quota thing that was put into effect at the World Championships last year. So, tough, but I'm sure it was inspiring nonetheless. But were you in Asia basically for the whole month between four continents and the Olympics?
We were.
Yeah, we went to four continents, and that went pretty well. And then
pretty well.
And then we were supposed to stay in Taipei for like a 2-week period, four continents and like 10 days after, and then go straight to Korea. But something with the ice happened to fall through. And U.S. Figure Skating was great. They scrambled and worked with Team Japan and got us some ice in Japan. So we ended up spending the next a little bit over a week in Japan. And then after that, went to Korea.
Yeah.
So it was It was a little bit of a bounce around Asia tour, so to speak. Yeah. But it was fun.
Quite an adventure.
Yeah. I love Japan, so it was great to spend a little more time there.
Yeah. Well, you said you got to see a lot of figure skating, obviously, in Korea, and you got to see some other sports as well, right? What were some of the highlights?
Probably one of the highlights for me was seeing the speed skating. I've never seen short track before.
It's insane.
Yes, it was crazy. It was a full house. It's definitely very popular in South Korea. So just feeling the energy of the rink, and every time a South Korean speed skater was on the ice, they were going absolutely nuts. So I really felt like somebody had just, I don't know, just done a quint every time they just stepped out on the ice. I was like, what is happening? Especially because I don't really know the rules of speed skating. So I was like, okay, this is new for me. It was really cool.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and it's very intense. You're on the edge of your seat the entire time. They're short, but then you never know when all four of them are going to go down at once. So it was an enjoyable thing, and that was on my birthday as well. So that was a pretty fun experience for us. We also saw men's hockey, which was an intense game that we missed because we left the last 2 minutes.
I was tired. Okay, so we were winning by like 2 points, and I was really tired, and I was like, I'm falling asleep. Let's go. We're winning. Go Team USA. We're great. We're awesome. Yes. So we get on the bus, and we're on the bus back, and then we look at our phones, and it was like, oh, Slovenia comes from behind. Team USA loses. And I was like,
in overtime.
Apparently, oh, wow.
It went to overtime, and they lost in the overtime. And we missed all of it.
So clearly, I was a good luck charm, and I needed to stay there for the boys.
I'm sure you know, I kind of missed all of the rest of everything that happened and outside of figure skating. So.
We got to watch the pair figure skating, which was some amazing skating there.
Yes.
And we got to watch the team events, which was nice, because we were gone before the rest of figure skating happened. So we got like a little snapshot of some of the rest of the events.
You got a little Shoma Uno to watch, Tara?
Yes. Yes, everyone knows I'm a big fan.
Shoma Uno and Tara Kane, the next Olympic champions coming up.
You know, I really think we have something that could really be special. We did a little bit of pair skating together when I was on the ice tour. He was not great at pair skating. So I think he should stick to singles. I think that's really his forte.
He's decent at singles, right?
Okay.
Right. I'm not too worried about the pair's career. So
yeah, Olympic silver medalist, right?
Yeah. Nothing crazy.
Yeah, nothing crazy. Well, I do want to get to your very triumphant return to nationals and to four continents later on in the podcast, but I do want to turn back the clock a good bit. The two of you teamed up back in 2012. It was a pretty quick first season for you. I had a very vivid memory of watching your programs at Eastern Sectionals that very first season. And I remember thinking, wow, there's a lot of potential there. I think the biggest thing that caught my eye was the fact that you had side-by-side jumps and they were actually, you know, there. And you know, with U.S. pairs, it's always been kind of like, you know, where are the side-by-side jumps, right? So take me back to the first couple of seasons that you were competing together. What were your hopes and dreams at that point?
Our first season, I was really learning all of my pairs elements. I remember having a really hard time learning death spirals. Because in single skating, you don't really have anything like a death spiral. It's just a very different experience to kind of lay your body out like that. And learning twists was really difficult for me as well. So my first year was really a learning experience. I had to learn how to do all of my lifts. That first year, where normally people experience that in a younger level, where you would have that experience in juvenile and then go to intermediate and then pick all those skills up slowly. I had to pick them all up at senior. So it was kind of a learning experience through all of those summer competitions. So my first year of skating senior, I just wanted to kind of figure everything out. And we were really excited to get our first international. We went to the Hague.
The Hague Challenge Cup.
Yeah, the Challenge Cup in the Netherlands. And we got a medal there and I was just ecstatic. So that was really exciting.
That's a funny competition because we had done fairly well in the long program at nationals. We had no value death spiral in the short program, which put us in an early group, but then skated a pretty good long. I popped something. I don't know, but Tara was amazing. Her first senior nationals, stepping out there and just nailed her stuff. we get this international, so we're on our way, and for the week beforehand, we just can't figure out how to do a throw triple loop, like, to save our lives. It's the first international, we're freaking out a little bit, and we get there, and still in practice, they're not easy, but we manage to stand up, and then she nails both of them in competition. I just think it's impressive to me, this little one over here. I know she's telling me not to, but...
But yeah, so then from that point on, I think that first international competition served as a lot of experience and inspiration, because then I was like, okay, you know, we're actually kind of okay at this. Like, we're kind of good. And then we moved on and started getting more international experience. And I think at that point, I realized that we could be something in the future. So I think... Until we got our first national medal in 2015, that was the goal, is to get on the national podium. Mm-hmm. And then when we did that, it was all up from there, I guess.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. I have a little bit of a different memory. I remember when we teamed up, Mr. Peterson said to me, it's not a matter of if you're a national champion together, it's a matter of when.
Yeah, he has always said that, and I always rolled my eyes. I was like, yeah, okay. Sure.
But I took it to heart, because I had been skating with Mr. Peterson for a while at that point. And when he has his gut feelings, or his, like, when he makes broad statements like that, they're pretty true to fact.
Yeah.
So it was something that was always in the back of my mind, but you've gotta find a way to get there. It's not always a straight path, that's for sure.
Well, you were talking about that national title 2 years ago in St. Paul. I remember being at that competition, watching you just put down two programs that every single time, it was just the audience was on their feet. How did that win change you as competitors?
Brings a lot of confidence that you've got that in there. There's always something that, as a competitor, you can go back and pick, well, I could have done this better, I could have done that better. But time and time again, people have told us similar things to that. So while we may feel like there's things we could have done better, there were definitely strong performances. And it brings a lot of confidence to you when you're going back out on the ice the next time around. Even if it hasn't been done recently, it's in there, you know?
Yeah, I think what helped me a lot with that performance is that wasn't like a stellar year for us. It's not like we were hitting every competition, medaling, skating clean programs. So looking at the season as a whole, I don't think you would have expected that to happen. And I, going into that competition, wouldn't have said, I'm going to skate two clean programs and win nationals. Partially because that's not the type of person I am. But also because I just, you know, realistically looking at the programs I had put out, you know, they weren't all that consistent. So going into future seasons, I know that even if I haven't skated clean, consistent run-throughs all year or all season,
perfect
competitions, I can pull it out when I need to.
Probably a bit of a theme this season as well.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that in a little bit. But St. Paul seems to have a bit of a magical thing for the two of you now, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. After that national title, it was difficult. It was challenging. Tara, you had just come back from injuries, and I think you had a surgery on your hip before that. It seemed like that 2016-17 season was just kind of relentless, and then you had the concussion at nationals. And what were you two thinking as you were going through that season?
Honestly, we have tried to forget that season, like. It sounds horrible, but it was such a bad time.
Yeah, it was very difficult.
Yeah.
Tara was in immense pain every day, and we had finished Worlds in Boston, and we had decided, you know, we're gonna make sure she's not in pain. We're gonna do what it takes now to make sure that she's not in pain for the rest of the season. And it just didn't work out. We did exactly what the doctors told us to do, and they thought we were doing the right thing, and
basically, it's like we did everything possible to avoid this surgery and avoid this from happening.
Mm-hmm.
We thought we had checked every box that we needed to, and it was just not in the cards.
Yeah.
But that
the universe
season,
had other plans.
Yeah,
so.
That season, like you said, it felt to me relentless. I just couldn't catch a break.
Yeah.
And it was just one thing after the next of, I don't know if you want to call it bad luck or just not something, things not working out, but we just consistently put out skates that we weren't proud of, and I'm glad it's over. I felt like at Nationals, we were really hoping that we were going to be able to pull out some magic, and it just wasn't there. I was in so much pain, and I just couldn't do it.
Yeah, you couldn't perform proper technique because the pain was so intense.
Yeah, you can only fight through so much, and I just needed... I needed the surgery, and I'm so glad I had it done. It was an absolutely horrible recovery. It was really painful, but it was for the best, and things have just gotten progressively better since.
Yeah. How is that knee now since the surgery?
Well.
it's getting better.
Yeah, it's getting better. It's definitely, like I said, way better than when it was injured. It's not injured anymore.
Yeah.
That injury is better.
But it's still a long road and a long process.
Yeah.
They told Tara that it would be between 18 months and 2 years before the knee is completely pain-free. And we hit a year while we were in
Korea. Hit a year on February 14th, which was the day of my surgery, Valentine's Day.
It was nice to have that landmark.
Yeah.
And we are skating much better on it, which is nice to have. But...
it's definitely, I know I'm still on an upward climb. Mm-hmm. It's a, they call it a road to recovery, but that makes it sound like it's like a clear path that I can just take. Mm-hmm. And it's not. There's been so many ups and downs and bumps along the way. So I'm still kind of on that road, if you want to call it that, but I still have a long way to go.
Yeah. Ice Dance fans will know Penny Coombs had not a similar surgery, but a knee surgery as well, mm-hmm. and that she's had a long road to recovery as well, and her having been to the Olympics and now withdrawing from Worlds, shows that the knee thing, especially in figure skating, the knee thing is just so difficult to deal with when you have those kinds of injuries.
Yeah, when I was recovering, I actually watched some of Penny's videos that she had made of her rehab process and her blogs, which I found very, very helpful because even though it wasn't exactly the same injury, it was nice to know that someone out there was kind of going through something similar. And she was back on the ice when I was off. So I was like, okay, I can get there. It'll take a while, but I will get there.
Yeah. What's been the toughest part of the return?
The toughest part of the return was initially I was setting time frames for myself. And I would say, okay, I want to compete at Cup of China. So to compete at Cup of China, I need to start jumping by this day. I need to start my throws by this day. I was very organized with what I wanted to happen and when I wanted it to happen. And I found out that was unrealistic. So time and time again, I would get surprised by my knee not being ready for things that I was hoping it would be ready for. And we had planned for it to be ready for. It was a plan that I had created with my physical therapists and my doctors. And we had all sat down and come up with, when I'm going to do my actuals.
Like
and
the best case scenario, here's the goals.
Yeah.
They were lofty goals because we were trying to set ourselves up to be ready for this season mm-hmm. as a whole.
But I thought if I do everything I can, if I do, PT twice a day, if I do everything. I lived in Colorado Springs at the Olympic Training Center for over 5.5 months, I think, if you look at the whole mm-hmm. time I was there. So I thought if I do everything, if I devote my life to this, to getting back, I'll get back and I will, be able to compete at these competitions and I'll be able to put out this body of work that they need to see to make the Olympic team. This one spot, I'll be able to get it. Like, I'll just work my hardest. And then it comes time for these dates to come and I'll wake up and it's just not happening. I'll try to skate and it's still too painful. And there's a part of me that wants to do it anyways. And then there's another part that's like, that's how you got injured in the first place. you need to calm down. So it was so hard, and I was so disappointed in myself so many times of like, why aren't you doing throws yet? Why can't you do your jumps yet? Well, why can't you walk down the stairs yet? You know, things like that. Like, get off your crutches. So it was so disappointing for so long that I was in my head falling behind on this timeline, which was just so outrageous in the first place, this timeline I had set for this initially this 2-year-long recovery that I was like, if I push really hard, I can make this Grand Prix in 4 months or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it was just unrealistic, but I was hoping that if I tried my hardest, you know, it would happen.
Yeah.
So I think the hardest thing was to finish the question was that we set unrealistic expectations. And then when you fall short of those goals, it hits you hard. And that was something that we learned to
let go of.
To let go of and allow ourselves to be where we were and be the best we could be for where we were.
Yeah. Once I let go of that timeline and I absolutely gave up hope, I was like, okay, I had like a heart to heart with myself. I like had like a come to Jesus moment. And I was like, okay, listen, you're not making the Olympic team. You're not skating in nationals. You're not going to be ready. You're not going to Worlds. You just need to work on like figuring out how to walk down the stairs correctly. That's the challenge today. And then once I did that and I just took it like day by day and I was like, you're not thinking about anything else. Today, it's just how to stand on one foot.
Yeah.
That's when things started actually improving.
Yeah, literally one step at a time.
Well,
before we get to this, the rest of this season, I want to talk about your programs. You made a very conscious decision for this season to work with new choreographers for your programs. And I wanted to start with your short, which is your second Phantom of the Opera program. You know how much I love Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, we're taking options for our third Phantom of the Opera program. So if you have like a masquerade maybe or like your third option, just send them on over.
It's a great program. It was choreographed by Massimo Scali. You've gotten me all flustered now. the short program was choreographed by Massimo Scali. Tell me about your love for Phantom of the Opera and how this program is a little bit different from your first one.
So this program was a little accidental.
It was a mistake.
A little bit of my stupidity, I think. It started after 2016 season, where we skated to Phantom for our long program. I was listening to music. You kind of go through that process after the end of each season. Just listen to as much music as you can and try and pluck stuff out. And I heard this song and I was like, wow, I really like this song. I brought it in and Tara and Mr. Peterson were like, Danny, this is Phantom. And I was like, oh.
He plays it and he goes, guys, this song is beautiful. We have to listen to it. We have to skate to it. It's beautiful. And he plays it and I'm like, Danny, this is Phantom of the Opera. And he's like, oh, it is?
It's not Barbara Streisand, though.
Yeah, so no, I was like, we can't skate to this, Danny. So, you know, we skate to some other program, whatever, we do that year, which we have erased from our minds. And then we had already decided on Swan Lake, and we didn't know what we were going to do for the short program. And we had just come off of this horrible year, and I'm in this surgery and this horrible experience, and I was really down. I had gone down a dark road by myself for a little bit there, and I ended up listening to Phantom of the Opera, and I started crying in my car, and I was like, it's beautiful. He was right, it's beautiful. And there's a part at the very beginning where Raoul is talking to Christine, and he says, no more talks of darkness.
Yeah.
Forget these wide-eyed fears. And I thought, like, that's it. Like, I just need to stop thinking so dark and just, like, forget my fears. So that's a very simple version of the time I cried in my car to Phantom of the Opera. And then I decided that that's what we needed to skate to because I have a real feeling when music makes me cry, I'm like, that's it. We need to skate to it. So I cried in my car, and those Raoul spoke to me personally at that exact moment. And the short program was born.
That's how it went. That is how it went. It all started with an accidental, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've worked with choreographers mainly who are ice dancers. Has that been a conscious decision as well?
Yeah, actually it hasn't. I mean, not that we don't like other choreographers, not that if you, like, you weren't a nice dancer, we wouldn't work with you or something, but we really wanted to work with Shaylin this year. We had this idea of skating to Swan Lake, and we wanted to find someone who we thought would create the best working program for us. So when Mr. Peterson brought up Shaylin, we both really gravitated to that idea.
We jumped at the opportunity, and thankfully she was willing to work with us, and it was an amazing experience working with her and with Shay Zakuski, who is
Shays.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, I think he gets left out too often.
Yes,
because he was amazing as well, and the two of them worked in such a cohesive manner where they would work together and try and figure out movements, and then one Shay would come with me and one would go with Tara, and
then we'd swap,
teach us the movements as like the males and the females, and then swap and do it as partners, and then Tara and I would come together.
Yeah.
And I think that you can see that in the movements of the program this year, that they really are very well thought out and choreographed by the choreographers. And I was very happy when it was actually Mr. Peterson's suggestion for us to work with outside choreographers this year, and he wanted to push us, and I was happy that he came up with the idea and decided to push us in this direction, because I feel like we were able to grow as artists, and some of Tara's acting background comes out in the programs. And
yeah, I really think my high school theater excels in these programs.
It all comes full circle, that high school theater. I do really think that Free Skate has been a breakthrough program for you as skaters. It does seem like that's brought out a different side of you. It's also brought out, I really think, a new found sense of kind of we are pair skaters that you didn't have before. So, you know, kudos to you guys for...
Thank you.
For getting going out of your comfort zone for that. Are you guys expecting to, I mean, it's, the season is not over yet, but are you expecting to think about outside choreographers again for next season?
Yes.
Yeah, we're in the process of nailing down choreographers, so
yeah,
don't want to go out and say exactly just yet in case it doesn't work out with scheduling and such, but yeah, we have enjoyed the experience a lot and would love to continue.
Cool. Well, as to this season, it has been quite a ride. I asked you, the two of you, about this at Nationals in the press conference when you won the silver there. Your first competition was Golden Spin, and it was it was a bit of a rough go, and you said that you weren't even at full training capacity until like a week or two before the event happened. So what did competing at Golden Spin do for you and to the rest of your season?
Oh, it was incredibly important for us because we needed to get out and get all of that fear, get all of that what if, get all of that year of what wasn't good out of our system before Nationals.
Mm-hmm.
It was not our best skate by far, but it was an immense turning point for us.
I also think it was helpful for me because when we got home, we had this beautiful long program and it kind of helped us go, okay, you know what? We need to swap these two elements around and we need more time here. We need less time here. So we were able to look at the programs under a competition setting and figure out what wasn't working.
That U.S. Championships, like from an outsider's perspective, I really didn't know what to expect from you. Considering that it, you know, my one data point was Golden Spin, and that you were returning, not really knowing where you were fitting in at that point. What was that event like for you? And also, what was Four Continents and winning there like for you?
Yeah, so going to U.S. Nationals, you say like you didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what to expect. So sometimes, most of the time, I'll go into competitions and I'll think, okay, I'm a very realistic person, so I'll think about us as a team, and I'll think, okay, we could fall anywhere between this place and this place. Like, realistically, we could possibly get, you know, in any competition, like first or second, or we could, you know, really mess up and we could end up all the way down in 80th. But I'm very realistic about like where I'll place us in my head. So I had like thinking about nationals, I had this huge range.
The widest range.
The widest range. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know because I really hadn't competed against a lot of the teams. It's not like I had four competitions to compare it to and be like, oh, well, we placed ahead of this team here or that team there. No, I was just like, well, I mean, I've been doing pretty good lately. Yeah. I don't think I'm going to explode.
Yeah, so. we had been doing better leading up to nationals, and we skated very well the week of nationals. Things kind of started to click at that time for us, which I guess is good timing, right?
Best time so, you could do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we peaked for the occasion, which was, mm-hmm. you know, how what we would prefer. But going into it, it was very nerve-wracking. It was scary. It was really good to have our friends there because it was just a very anxious, scary time. I didn't know what was going to happen, and I didn't have a whole lot of confidence going into it.
Yeah. Confidence definitely built as the competition went along.
Yeah.
We practiced well, and the confidence built. We did a good short program, and the confidence continued to build. And, I mean, there was mistakes in the long, but it was night and day better than Zagreb. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that definitely continued building for us into four continents. We came out of nationals feeling like we had our success for the season.
Yeah.
Because before Tara's surgery, and even at the very beginning, we were like Olympic team, you know? And then we kind of took a step back, and we wanted to make the Olympic team more than anything else, but we realistically knew that it was incredibly hard, and we just wanted Tara to be back on the ice competing and
healthy.
Yeah.
We had started calling the Olympic team the impossible dream, and we were like, okay, well, if we don't get the impossible dream, that's fine because that was impossible. So that's okay, but if we compete, that's great. Like, if we can make it to nationals and compete there, that's fantastic. We accomplished the goal. So going to four continents was like the icing on the cake. It was like we were finally back. We had made it. And I know, like, that's not what a lot of people would say Olympic year. Like, oh, I got to go to four continents. I've made it. That's clearly not what the goal is for most people. But for us, it really felt like we were back on the competitive scene. And that was, you know, doing a lot for us.
Gave us a lot of confidence going into the competition, for sure.
Yeah.
And obviously that competition went even better than nationals. Mm-hmm. And we look to continue the trend, you know, kind of keep ourselves steadily improving and enjoying our skating. Yeah. Which really, this year has become a lot about that.
Like, Four Continents was a fun competition. We enjoyed being there. We enjoyed our practices. And, like, the year before, it was not fun. We didn't enjoy competing. It was just felt like it was dragged out, and we weren't enjoying ourselves. So I think we really found the love of competing again. So.
Yeah. It's hard when you're watching your partner be in immense pain, or as Tara being in immense pain, and thinking like, is this really worth being at this competition?
Yeah.
I mean, it's what we work for day in and day out all year long. Right. But you gotta weigh things at one point in time and kind of decide is her being in this much pain really worth us being here at this competition? And it makes you question things, and like Tara said, there wasn't as much joy in the competitions the season where she was
injured
and in pain. So it's great to feel this year that we really are back enjoying our skating, enjoying our competitions. I mean, we're not going to sugarcoat it. Life isn't easy 100% of the time. There's times where practicing is hard and you don't want to go into practice, or there's pain again, but as a overall all-encompassing year, like, there's a lot more love of skating, and the joy in skating is back, which is incredibly important, I think.
Oh, that's great to hear. Also good to hear that you guys didn't decide to literally skate to the impossible dream. So that would have been
Don't give us any ideas.
Right. Thank you very much, and so wonderful to have you on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having us.
Okay, so the World Championships are happening this week. Be sure to tune in and watch everything on icenetwork.com. I wanted to thank our guests for this episode of the podcast, Ben Augusto and Tara Kane and Danny O'Shea. If you missed last week's part one of our Worlds preview, be sure to catch it on icenetwork.com under the fans page or on Apple Podcasts, where you can get all of our episodes archived. Ice Talk is produced by Kate Sullivan and edited by Mickey Brown. From the Ice Network studios in downtown Manhattan, I am Jackie Wong. Stay cool, and we will talk to you again soon.